The Get This podcast is brought to you by my WordPress web development agency brand, K2 Creative. You can visit getthispodcast.com/K and the numeral 2, that's getthispodcast.com/K2, and click book a discussion for a free 30-minute discussion on anything related to WordPress. I'll be happy to help. Whether you need a new website or you have an existing site, you're not happy with the speed, you're not happy with the security, you need plugins updated, you're having issues, your developer ran off to Costa Rica, you don't know where to find him or her, we can help. My team builds websites that drive millions of page views a year. We can help with membership, e-commerce. If it's in WordPress, we can make it happen. Visit getthispodcast.com/K2 and click the book a discussion link, and I'll be happy to help with whatever you need in WordPress. Hey everybody, this is Kevin Kautzman with the podcast Get This. It's the show about things people love. Coming to you live to tape, live from tape? What do you say, Chad? It's live to tape, right?
Yeah, live to tape sounds great.
Yeah, that sounds right. October 22nd in the foul year of our Lord 2019 in a basement dungeon studio here in West LA. And I've got my good friend and guest here, Chad Eshman. Chad, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Super.
Happy to be in a dungeon.
Yeah, this is an emergency Airbnb after my first Airbnb didn't come through. That's a story. Confirmed, everything's set. Took my money. Called the lady on the day. Oh, you don't have a booking with me. Whoa, I don't. Hello.
That's bad news.
Awkward. Yeah. I mean, Airbnb usually works for me, but this time it was a little squirrely. But I'm here. And Chad, this is a show about things people love. It's an interview podcast. I talk to different people. Great excuse to chat for an hour. What's something you love? What are we talking about today?
Well, what I love, as you probably know, is I love making plays. Mm-hmm. And since moving to LA 4 years ago, what that means for me has changed a lot. So I kind of wanted to talk about, as a group of playwrights out here, what that looks like and what we're doing and what we're excited about making these days.
That's very cool. And obviously, I'm a playwright. You're a playwright. That's how we initially met at the Kenyan Writers Conference.
Yeah.
The now...
I think it is now no longer with us.
Yeah.
But that was the first year.
It was nice. It was a fun time.
Yeah.
How many years did they have? Three or four? Five?
Four or five, something like that?
Yeah. That's a bummer that went away. That was quite cool.
It was. Very idyllic. In the countryside-esque setting and just working on plays.
Yeah. That was one of those moments where the first time I had a realization that my experience at the University of Minnesota, Go Gophers, Sky Uma, Row the Boat, was not like other liberal arts experiences.
Okay.
You know, you go to the University of Minnesota and you're right in the city. You're right on, you know, in the middle of Minneapolis and St. Paul. The joke was, I leaned down, I found $5, and I looked up and I saw Prince. Prince, people would see Prince on the street. We were in a big city. And compared to, say, Sewanee down in Tennessee or Kenyon, that university is in the middle of nowhere.
It's just a lot of green. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Very, very, yeah. Idyllic beautiful. Is a word. Idyllic and beautiful is a word, right? And so you're a playwright. And tell me a little bit about the scene out here in LA and how things are changing and what it means to be a playwright in 2019 in the United States on the West Coast.
I know. It's a great question. And it's all theories to me at this point. Like I said, I've only been here a few years. But one of the things that really struck me when I first got here is I immediately was introduced to several playwrights who are all working with various groups in the area, doing a lot of development, a lot of staged readings. So that scene to me immediately seemed very vibrant and welcoming. Which I wasn't sure if it would be, you know, when you're new to town.
Mm-hmm.
That was encouraging. But I did find that I wasn't seeing a whole lot of, like, storefront theater stuff, like in Chicago, for instance, that I was truly enamored with. And I don't know, I'm going to nerd out with you for a second. I assume you're cool with that, but...
That's the idea.
When I was thinking about this topic in our conversation today, I was always struck... I wrote this paper a long, long time ago about the Impressionists and how that related to writing.
Mm-hmm.
From my point of view. And I remember reading that a lot of the Impressionists felt like, oh, the camera has been invented now. So me being able to recreate a perfect portrait of a landscape isn't quite so useful right now because a camera can do that better in a split second. Mm-hmm. What can a painter do that a camera can't do?
Mm-hmm.
And that led to some of this experimentation. And I think we're taking a similar approach to what, at least what my group is doing in playwriting right now, and thinking, what can we do that's weird? What can we do that helps people explore something new in a way that they can't get from a screen?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're most excited about right now.
What group is this?
The company here is called Trap Street.
Mm-hmm.
And we grew off from our sibling company, Living Room Playmakers, out in Chicago. And that's been running for a good, 6 years or something like that. And what we started doing out there was finding weird spaces around Chicago that weren't being given enough love or exploration, that people hadn't really investigated enough. And we would create shows set in that specific place at this specific time. So people could come and check out the space, but also have a fun narrative experience along the way.
Right. And it was called the Living Room?
Living Room Playmakers.
Okay. And are they still online? They're still active?
Yeah. You can find them on the interwebs and see what they're up to next. I know. I think they've got a new show in development.
Okay.
And then Trap Street out here, we found that with LA, we wanted to do a similar thing, but it's a very different city, very different audiences. And so we're doing a similar thing, but we're always trying to add, and LRP does this too, but always, let me give you an example. We did one about a neon artist downtown. She makes sculptures out of neon.
Right.
And so we studied her past and her history, and that was our source material, was like her life as an artist. But then we added this twist where when people showed up that night, they were told the artwork you're seeing tonight is not just neon tubes. These are tombstones filled with people's souls. Right. Rather than being buried or cremated, they've been suspended in neon.
Okay. All right.
And then you put in your headphones and took an audio tour where our actors played characters who were showing you around the space and telling you the quote-unquote backstories
of
the artwork.
Great.
That's the best example I can give you of what we're trying to do as playwrights right now.
Sure.
In real spaces.
Immersive, theatrical events that aren't kind of proscenium kitchen room sink plays.
Yeah, but they're also not like the shows where you're going to have to become a character and get on stage, or, you know, it's pretty easy entry.
Yeah, okay, all right. Have you seen Sleep No More?
I actually never have, but I've heard so much about
it.
And I really do need to get out there.
Come to New York and see Sleep No More. I'm always looking for an excuse to go. I had a great time, though. I've been once. I want to go again. I may be going in the next week or two. It's worth it.
Any standout moments when you did it?
I had the sixth floor experience, which you can Google, and it was quite a way to start the evening. I don't know if it's appropriate to, well, you know what? I'll tell the story. So, you show up, it's this, there's a bit of a kind of a, somebody's singing, and it's, I don't want to give it all away. You want to go, but I think I can talk about this without ruining anything for anyone, because it's rather a rare experience. And you can't, I know there's a community of people online who go multiple times and attempt to find these various activations.
Yeah.
I got lucky. And so they put you in an elevator. They tell you the rules of the evening. You know, everyone has their mask on. The elevator goes all the way up. And I don't know if it was my height or where I was standing or what it was, but the elevator stopped and they shoved me out into a hallway and the elevator door closed behind me, and it was only me. And then there was this woman dressed in old fashioned clothing, and she started delivering a monologue, I presume from Macbeth. She sat me down in an old wheelchair, lay the wheelchair flat, rolled me down the hallway, or did she lay it? I can't remember the exact order, but rolled me down this dark hallway. There was music playing, like from a Hitchcock movie or something. There was a diorama? Is that the word? It was like a model of an old palace over my head with like lights, and this was all done just for me, you know. And she's giving this monologue, sits me back up in the wheelchair, wheels me back down the hallway, leaves me there. I stand up, look back, total darkness. Nobody's there. There must have been a trap door. And then there's one of the ushers in their creepy mask kind of waving his finger at me to come down the stairs. And that's how my evening started.
That's amazing.
It was a trip.
Oh my gosh.
It's cool. And I have no doubt if you go something like that, maybe not quite that personal, but I would recommend it. And you know, the thing I would encourage people to do is, if you go, get the, spring for the extra little bit, and, you know, cut the line and get a table. And it's not that much more money to kind of get the VIP,
yeah,
you know, ticket. If you're going to go. Yeah, it's really cool what they did. I remember when that came out, when that first happened, everybody was talking about it. It was really a big deal. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, we had a show out here in LA shortly after I moved here that it was kind of like Take That Sleep No More experience, but the theme now is you're trying to join a new cult.
Okay.
And so I also got singled out when I went to this show.
What was the show called?
It was called The Tension Experience. I think now it's going to Vegas or something. Like it's becoming a big thing.
Yeah. Do you remember the name of the company?
You know, it was still a baby project from, is it Darren Boosman? Daryl Boosman? The guy who directed a bunch of the Saw movies. Him and a friend, I think, were the ones behind it.
Cool.
So, I'm sure there's a company now. Because it got huge. Like, there was a 6-month lead up where they were teasing it and sending people on little quests and trying to really build a world. So people got very into it. Like, entire forums of people just talking about the theories. Anyway, when I went, you know, the first thing you do is meet in a parking lot where they put you in a van with bags over your head and you go to basically try to join this cult, and most of the group stayed together, but I was singled out right away. And by the end, I was selected that night. I slowly started to uncover clues that this was like a very weird group that somehow believed you could reconnect with God by sort of sacrificing someone and removing all their senses.
Okay.
And I was selected for that.
Wait, to be sacrificed?
To be sacrificed, yeah.
Well, you look like a human sacrifice.
Yeah, to be fair. So I had a target on my head the moment I walked in, I guess. It was a crazy experience, though. Just like, really intense.
How long did it last? How long was the evening?
It was I think it was at least an hour and a half, if not longer. It was kind of hard to keep track of time, to be honest, because you went through this whole series of losing your senses where you were being blindfolded and your hands were being tied together. Whoa. And dunked in wax. And at one point I woke up in a chair, so to speak, with some guy who was giving me an IV drip and telling me everything was going to be okay. And there was another moment where they took off my blindfold and I was in a room full of sand with naked people walking around me.
Holy
just
hell.
Crazy shit. I had to take tests. I had to put other people on the tour through the ringer myself because like they were testing me to see if I would test them.
And this all happened in a couple of hours?
Oh, one night.
This blows my little wheelchair experience out of the water. Wow.
Well, it was just different.
That's mental.
Yeah, it was.
Holy
so,
cow.
I don't know. We're trying to take little slivers of that, but the difference with us is we want to really set it in. We're not going to buy a warehouse like either of these groups. It's going to be the local art shop or, you know, we did stuff in a brewery once, stuff like that.
How do you conceive the shows?
It always starts with a location.
Okay.
So we try to find spaces that have an interesting backstory or have a strong community connected to them or... sometimes I think our approach is here's a space that's like there was this velvet painting museum downtown that just closed because they couldn't afford to be there anymore. We'll find places like that that have weird velvet art.
What is a velvet painting museum?
God, they're crazy. Like these vintage paintings where they'd take sheets of velvet and scrape some of the velvet away.
Oh.
And then paint over them.
Whoa.
So they can be backlit and the light comes through.
Huh.
Really interesting.
Does it come with a cocaine addiction?
From what I can tell from my visit there, yes. I should have bought a painting.
What are some of the subjects of the velvet painting?
Oh, there was a UFO section. There was like an American president section. There was a naked lady, like Polynesian appropriation section.
Right, right.
You had everything going. A black light room.
Here's our problematic section.
Things that didn't age well. Oops, sorry.
Yeah, cool.
But then other times we'll find places, like we did a show out in Chicago with Cards Against Humanity in their offices, just because it's a place people usually don't get to see, you know?
Right.
So anything that gives people a little peek behind the curtain somehow.
Cards Against Humanity has an office?
/ playground.
Whoa, what is that like?
Oh my gosh, they have this entire building. They got heavy security with like fingerprint scanners the last time I checked. But they have a theater, they have a podcast studio, they've got a co-working space that people can buy desks at.
What on earth?
Oh, yeah.
What do they do all day?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Bring people like us in to make plays because they can, I guess.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Jeez. What a great game. I forget how fun that game is. Cards Against Humanity has a podcast?
I think it was more like they were creating a makerspace for people. Because we found that there's actually a really big tabletop gaming community in Chicago, and that's what the show became about.
Huh.
we got a filmmaker and we interviewed local game shop owners and game makers who are making board games today.
That's very cool.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. When was that?
That would have been, I don't know, 6 years ago?
Okay.
Five years ago? I don't know.
Yeah, this is a side of your work and your personality I wasn't quite clear on. So this is really interesting to get to know about this. Do y'all have something going on at Trap Street? Or you have something coming up? What's going on?
Yeah, we just finished. Well, I was sort of working on a short film the past few years, so we're just sending that out to festivals.
Oh, nice.
It's a weird short film. Thank you. It's all inspired by William Burroughs and Naked Lunch. So it's very weird, very trippy.
Yeah.
And then, so the next thing we're working on, and it's funny because, you know, we're on this topic of what do playwrights do in LA right now?
Mm-hmm.
And podcasting has become so big, and we've gotten really excited about it because one of the fun things about writing plays as opposed to film is you can go big. You can do crazy magical things because we don't have to truly produce it, right? It can be left to some imagination. And with podcasting, we can do a lot of those same things.
Mm.
So it gives our playwrights a chance to kind of play and flex their muscles. Mm-hmm. So we're going to create an ongoing series of short plays, kind of framed in sort of a world in the way that something like, you know, Twilight Zone or Black Mirror. It's not one storyline,
right?
But it's kind of got a feeling.
Like an anthology type.
Yeah, that kind
vibe.
Of approach, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds great. When is that coming out?
So we're recording the first few episodes in 2 weeks.
Okay.
So probably the end of this year, beginning of next year, we'll start releasing it. And all of the episodes will be connected to some real location in LA.
Oh.
Kind of the way we do our shows.
Okay.
Where we find a space and then we do something weird there. And we want to kind of create an alternate version of the city that we're playing in. So it's still LA, but it's maybe dystopian LA, or, well, you guys will see, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Cool.
Yeah.
Where can people find that?
You can check out our website, trapstreet.co, or on, you just keep an eye on iTunes and all that. We'll be popping up soon. We don't even have a title yet. So this is very raw right now.
Right.
I don't know if I can be talking about this. It's fine. I can talk about this.
You heard it here first. Trapstreet.co.
Mm-hmm.
Trap Street. Where does that come from? Where does the name come from?
Oh, yeah. I'm so happy you asked. Thank you. A Trap Street historically was a map maker's trick. So back when people made maps by hand, it was a real pain in the ass to make a map. It took a lot of time and energy.
You know? For sure.
And so what map makers would do is when they finished their map and were making prints, you know, that's how they made their money. So what they would do is they would draw in some little street or alleyway that doesn't actually exist. So that if they found that street or alleyway on some other guy selling maps, they'd know that they'd ripped him off. Right?
Wow.
So that was their little copyright. And so we're kind of doing something similar where we're taking parts of LA that are real, but kind of showing you the ghost version or the weird, you know, back alley version of that space. So we're kind of building our own trap streets.
I like it. I had an idea for a podcast. I don't know how serious it is, but it's an idea that flashed through my mind. It'd be this thing that would fly under the radar for a few years, and every episode would be an advertisement. It'd be a series of advertisements. So we'd read actual ads from actual advertisers. Maybe it'd be like affiliate marketing or something. We'd have performers do it over the top, and then we'd pepper in fake ads. And and then eventually, and it, you know, probably wouldn't be two full seasons, but eventually the people reading the ads would start being killed. And then you would discover that it's some sort of elaborate murder mystery, and you have to go back to the beginning and listen to all of the ads for clues inside the ads. So it's a show that starts with kind of native advertising instead of like slipping it in. Like it's the foreground of the show, and the clues are actually in the ads. I don't know what advertiser would actually want to be involved in that.
Hey, but we got to find a way to make these shows.
Yeah, right. So it's a bit of a joke, but it could actually be quite fun. I like the idea of a, you know, like a kind of an interactive murder mystery type podcast could be quite cool.
Yeah.
All of this reminds me of a company that I've done a little work with, and they're called Barbecue Films in New York City, and they do immersive cinematic theatrical events.
Oh.
So they'll screen Wayne's World. They'll get Alice Cooper's daughter to sing Be My Frankenstein.
Uh-huh.
And they'll screen the movie and have a band. And when the movie comes to Bohemian Rhapsody, they'll stop the movie, the band will play, the audience will sing along, you know, stuff like that. They got nominated for a Creative Arts Emmy for a show for the Mr. Robot show. And they had the CEO for Mr. Robot. The actor was there on stage. I played security. It's similar, but it's more about embracing the intersection between live theater and film.
Yeah.
So they kind of lean toward the film side of things. Yeah, it's very
cool. That's really fun.
I love seeing what people are doing now, you know, now that, are we really aspiring to reach Broadway with our new plays in America?
No, I'm not anyway.
Right. I mean, I know some people are. And yeah, of course, if you have that kind of career and you have that clout, wonderful, good for you. It's just, there's so much more going on. Yeah. It's about live performance and creativity and yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, and I know a lot of us still, well, actually, I'm not really submitting my plays out currently.
Mm.
I don't know. It's a few reasons. I mean, one is the time and energy I'm spending on sending the scripts out, I'd rather be making the podcast or whatever, right?
Yeah, actually doing creative work where you control the production and you're
not...
That
is nice.
Yeah, the submissions arena always kind of feels like you're looking for a handout somehow now.
Hmm.
It's sort of strange. And I've got a new play in circulation. You have to do it. And hopefully you find your people through that. Somebody reads your play, they like your play, you find a production or a working collaboration. That's the goal. But
yeah,
it seems like an old fashioned model somehow, you know? Like things are changing. It's better to kind of run your own show too.
I like that. And it also, I don't know, it gives all of our actors and writers more opportunities to perform and get their work out a little bit. And yeah, also just coming back to that idea that we were saying before of how we can use it to help people explore their cities and talk to other real human beings. I don't know. I feel like that's a time where we kind of need to figure out what we're doing with all the bar brick and mortar spaces as they become increasingly not stores.
Does your production company take commissions from people who are looking to activate a space or do a launch or something? It seems to me, because for example, Barbecue Films, they worked with the Mr. Robot people for that show. It was effectively something like a commission for Comic-Con. So they're a real-life, legitimate production company with budgets and stakeholders and all the rest. So does Trap Street do something like that? Would you be open to it?
We're open to it, yeah, because it's not something we've done yet.
Right.
But I have seen other companies do that around here. There's a group, I'm not sure what they're doing at the moment, but Play LA was another theater collaborative group around here, and I worked with them, did a little support work on an immersive activating sort of show to promote Big Little Lies, and that was funded by HBO directly.
Yeah, this seems to me something that y'all should, I don't know what your arrangement is, but it seems like a natural thing, and it's a way, I think, for artists to get paid and for proper, yeah, cool work to be done. I think Netflix something, $2 billion investment in new content now, I heard. And you just go, it's got to be a portion of that money to hire a production company to do an activation or a series of activations in LA around the release of a show. Why not? Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we have to look and think, you know, differently about what is a theatrical production company in 2019.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's true. And there's so many, in LA specifically, things like Comic-Con and E3 that are in the general vicinity of Southern California, San Diego and all that. And those are events where that's starting to happen more, as they're doing activations where you can meet the characters from your games or whatever. And so I'm just trying to keep an eye on all that and see, you know, that's not our scene in particular, but I'm still excited to see that stuff happening.
Yeah, it's interesting. It makes me wonder, and I should talk to my friends over at Barbecue Films. It makes me wonder how they sort of get hooked up. RFPs go out? How does it all sort of work? And it's probably like any other line of work where once you're keyed in a little bit and you start meeting people, and you build a name for yourself, people
also
reach out to you. That's really what you want. Hey, do you want to be a part of this Comic-Con release? What would you do here? It's really fun. You get to be creative and theatrical, maybe without all the old trappings of the classic sort of way of doing theater. Yeah.
And you can reach a lot of people who might not normally go to the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, this is another one of the reasons we've decided to go with a podcast format is, we've always had an ongoing series of table readings that we do once or twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
It's a chance for us to show people what we do, try out some new writers and actors we haven't worked with yet and see if we mesh. And it's just a fun day to hang out. But, you know, when you've got an audience of maybe 30 or 40 people, that's your audience for the day.
Yeah.
But with the podcast, we thought, well, we can reach a lot more people and build a name for ourselves and build an ongoing world or story. And maybe there's some spinoff podcasts. It just felt like a good opportunity for our artists to get a little more exposure.
Yeah.
And see how people react to their work.
It's a fun format, and you're able to produce it yourself for you know, without a lot of overhead. It's pretty easy to put out a podcast. Well,
relatively.
Maybe not easy, but...
Compared to making a film,
sure.
You know, a month, once a week.
Right. It's something you can do. That's really interesting. So people can go to trapstreet.co and I presume follow along and see what's going on. It's very cool.
Yeah, and if there is one of my colleagues, Amy Thorstensen, just released season 2 of one of her podcasts, and so a lot of Trap Street people worked on that. I play one of the characters.
Uh-huh.
I'm sort of an evil robot in a way, android. I don't want to spoil everything.
Okay, all right.
It's called A Cosmic Love with Madame Exandra, and that you can find right now on Apple Podcast and all those kinds of places.
Cosmic Love with Madame Exandra.
Yeah, it's a great little show about a relationship and sex and love advice, sort of, savage love type person, has this radio show, but she is in outer space on an intergalactic sort of pleasure sphere where people go to party and then things go crazy.
Uh-huh.
And she has to go on some adventures and save people and shoot laser beams. And really fun.
Is it very ad-libby or is it scripted?
No, it's all fully scripted. Yeah.
Wow.
So she's getting the calls. And so you're hearing that, but then you're also hearing her behind the scenes dealing with whatever drama is happening and it gets dramatic.
That sounds great. I will check that out. That's really funny. And again, that's on iTunes and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
All right. This is a huge podcast. Not Get This, although Get This is an amazing podcast.
What? I was told that this had big listenership.
This gets,
here.
Reach. Yeah. Makes Rogan look like peanuts.
That's your slogan, right?
Nope. Not at all. GetThisPodcast.com. Have you listened to My Dad Wrote a Porno?
I have not, but I've heard it's very good.
Is it very good? It's bingey. Binge-worthy. And of course, it just keeps repeating itself. It ends up being one sex scene after the next. But there's something about their dynamic and the cringeworthiness of it all, and very strange.
Interesting.
Very fun. And of course, they sell out. They do Radio City Music Hall now. So here we are.
Yeah, we've been seeing a lot of that too. We definitely will, as we build the characters and the episodes and the worlds of the podcast, we're planning to do some little tiny live events here and there around town. Where we explore those storylines with the actual, where the voice actors are now there in person with you.
Oh, fun.
Playing the characters. And we're very excited about that kind of stuff, too.
It seems like there are so many things you could do with that could be clever and creative. And reminds me of that video game, which I never played, but Nine Inch Nails released a video game that I think even intersected potentially with like an online game. This was years ago. They released some sort of, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was around year zero era Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah.
I think it was kind of an interactive game where they were hiding things. They were hiding USB sticks around and puzzles. There was a lot of that for the Mr. Robot thing that Barbecue Films did too, where there were Easter eggs in the release. In the run-up to it, and if you were able to crack, because Mr. Robot has all sorts of those codes embedded in the show itself,
kind of
hacker games. If you're paying close attention to Mr. Robot, there's a lot of weird hidden stuff.
Yeah,
and if you're at your computer when Mr. Robot is on and you're following along, you can do stuff.
Okay.
Backdooring this interactivity is fun.
Yeah, we're excited about that too, because we still want you to be able to just buy a ticket and show up to the live shows and have a good time. But if you're a listener of the show and you know who the characters are, there will be some Easter eggs for you.
Well, you kind of want to have like the obsessive childless cat mom experience.
Absolutely.
Like you got a lot of time in your hands.
Hey, that's the kind of family we love.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they got a lot of disposable income. You want the shirt?
And they obviously get very invested.
Invested. I've got nothing against single cat moms.
They go all in.
All in. You got to know what's up. This sounds great. I'm excited. What about in LA, the more traditional, hey, we're a theater company and there's a new script. And what's that like? What's that scene like?
Yeah, it's funny. Like those groups do exist. And I go see my friends' plays from time to time. There's a lot of stuff up around North Hollywood. There's some theaters in Atwater Village. And some stuff in Hollywood. There is a Fringe Festival. My friend did a piece in that, and it was really fun. So that stuff happens here. It is alive and well. Like with any city, you got to kind of know the scene a little bit.
Yeah.
But
it just seems to me there has to be so much talent in this town that's hungry to do something, anything. Please, let's work on something.
That's true.
While everyone's waiting for the big call and pilot season and a casting or whatever, it just seems like Yeah. If you could put it together, there's a pool of talent.
It's true. And I think it's one of the reasons people have been excited about Trap Street is that it's another place to come do that. And a lot of the groups I've seen kind of come and go a little bit, even just in the time I've been here.
Mm-hmm.
Like our friends had an ongoing show called Grown Up Storytime, which started in Austin. And that was going on monthly for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. And that one was fun because what they would do, I participated as a writer. And so you send in your 5-minute story or whatever that you've written out that can be performed.
Mm-hmm. Grown Up Storytime.
Grown Up Storytime. But then they take your script and hand it to someone else to perform, and you don't know what they're going to do with it.
Oh, no.
You just show up that night and see.
Oh, that's fun.
It's really fun.
Cool.
So I wrote a short story about my fear of mannequins when I used to work back in retail. And this one night where I had to like face a room full of mannequins, it was terrible. And the performer, no joke, turned it into a musical that he performed with his keyboard and then again with a guitar. And I've never been more proud.
Wow. Fear of Mannequins might be a show title, might be the episode title for this.
I like it.
It's okay, good. If you like it, that's the show title with Chad Eshman, Fear of Mannequins. GetThisPodcast.com, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts.
If you like it, that's the title. That also sounds like the title of something.
I love finding titles. That's one of the reasons I do a podcast, because every episode I get to come up with one.
Or
I find, you know, somebody else comes up with it, and then I just go, oh, that's it. That's it. Fear of mannequins.
My girlfriend and I have this terrible habit. Some people, when they get drunk, they start fights. Some people, when they get drunk, they want to kiss everybody. When we get drunk, we buy URLs that we don't need.
It's the most millennial thing I've ever heard.
We're just like, oh, that's a funny two-word smash together. Let's buy it at .com. So we have like we have opossumshoes.com. We have fuckyouralligator.com. We've got a bunch of good ones lined up. Just like when we're feeling inspired at the bar.
I love it. I love it. I have a lot of domains that sit. They're parked. They're never going to do anything.
Oh,
you're single-handedly responsible for a lot of people's, you know, drunk. Well, then the other thing is like you're drunk and you go through a list and you're like, oh, this is just a new business, $1 million business. Somebody else has it. You visit it and it hasn't been updated since 2013.
Yeah, I'm that asshole now.
Yeah, you're that guy. There's somebody right now who's like, oh man, fuck your alligator. It's great. You know, Kanye. You've definitely fucked up Kanye's night at least a few times.
Well, then I hope his lawyers get in touch and we can negotiate a deal.
Right.
We can make a deal.
Yeah, I think so. Kanye, you know where to find us. Trapstreet.co. Although Kanye may think Trap Street means something else, you know.
Actually, yeah, I did realize after the fact there's an entertainment company out in Philly, I think, called Trap Street that does trap music. So they're like a record label.
That's what I was
totally different meaning. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Not big on trap music myself. Okay.
I mean, I just hope they don't come up with any lawsuits. We're not going to sue you. You don't sue us. Truce? I hope so. Wildly different groups. So,
yeah.
Let's all get along.
What are some of your favorite podcasts aside from Get This, getthispodcast.com?
Yeah. I mean, I am a longtime listener of Savage Love. But in terms of narrative stuff that I'm very excited about, there's a lot of good stuff coming out of Gimlet Media. They've done some interesting narrative shows. I recently listened to Limetown for the first time, which is another narrative one that's quite good.
Yeah.
I also have a terrible memory, so I'm forgetting all of the
titles. No, it's great.
As we speak.
Yeah.
But there was another one with Rami Malek where I think it's called Blackout.
Oh, cool.
Where he's a radio host and all the power goes out and the city is shut down and it turns out to be more than you thought it was.
On earth did we arrive at a place where radio theater is now ascendant?
Yeah.
It has so much to do with access and the ability to reach audiences. What did McLuhan say, right? The medium is the message. It's almost a cliche now, but it's so true. What an amazing time.
It really is.
I got a $100 microphone, a USB cable, and a laptop that everybody has.
Yeah.
And here we are.
And we can produce a radio show now.
Pretty much,
like, it's a very different world.
Yeah, it's cool.
Like, when I grew up, and our setup is quite similar. We're, like, recording in a home studio with, like, an old iPhone connected to a USB mic. And we've got all of our... Anyway, I remember when I was in maybe middle school, and I took one of those multiple choice tests where it's supposed to predict what your career is going to be.
Right.
And I remember one of the top hits at the time was radio DJ for me. And I was like, no way. Are you kidding me? But now I'm like... oh, I'm starting a radio drama production company.
Yeah.
But that, this didn't exist back then.
Right.
Like, podcasts were not a big thing. No one was doing radio plays at that time.
Yeah.
That used to be like, we thought of those as old 1950s Western radio. Now it's a whole new era.
It's crazy. And I've had this connection to the UK for a while. I spent a year over there in 2006, 2007. I'm going to be over in London in November. And they've always maintain that. I remember when I was coming up in the theater there, doing theater there, they've always, because the BBC has always kind of a little under the radar, they commission a new radio drama, a lot of commissions, contests for radio plays. So they're in a position to absolutely capitalize on that, because that's still a cultural thing over there. Radio plays. Very interesting. And here we are full circle. And now Americans are like, I want to, basically doing radio plays. Tour of the worlds.
Yeah,
just
it is.
Yeah, on steroids.
Yeah, and the fact that we can produce this at such a small scale,
yeah, right,
it's pretty incredible. It reached that many people.
Yeah, we're sort of limited only by our imaginations. It's interesting.
It's one of the reasons I was always drawn to theater and playwriting in the first place.
Yeah, for sure.
And this is gonna, with this sort of a medium, we can take people to crazy worlds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there can be a sex advice show on a pleasure sphere in the middle of outer space. And that's totally doable on a podcast.
How long are each of those episodes? Like, what's the...
With Amy's show, I think those are, like 20, 30 minute episodes. And for our new one that's coming up, it'll be similar, but we also want to let the playwrights get weird. So there might be some episodes that are 5 minutes or some that are an hour. There might be some that are multi-part.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We'll do some live tapings. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I'm very excited to see more and more people doing that kind of stuff. And I think it's just a matter of time before a lot of theaters and playwrights are using these tools. Because why wouldn't we?
Right. I mean, if the goal is to entertain and engage an audience, this is where the audience is. Everybody's on their phones. They've got the podcast app or whatever else. Let's go.
Yeah. And when you're commuting, working out, it's great. It's something, you can't really watch something when you're driving, but you can listen.
Yeah. The